We are back. Welcome to the Justice and Drew Show. John, Drew, and Sam are on a much well-earned and deserved vacation. You are joined by me, Wrong About Everything's Brian McDaniel. My co-host today has been the lovely, the talented, the tall, the bearded Americans for Prosperity's Jason Flores.
Lovely and bearded. You try to pull that off.
Well, that's you're a unicorn, baby. We are joined by lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien.
Good to be here.
We have Brianne in the booth. And, you know, a theme, certainly through the 7 o'clock hour, was that, you know, the Democrats are taking their time, and almost kind of sort of a little bit, mostly impeaching the president and not doing a lot else. We talked about how they, aren't doing much for healthcare, but they are messing, they are messing with something that's a lot more important to many of us than our healthcare.
That's right.
Our liquor consumption.
Yes.
Wait, what?
I know. Well, lawyer extraordinaire is going to explain to us what they're doing to us.
So, fortunately, they've kicked the can down the road for 1 year. They've put a
Congress doesn't do that.
Yeah, I know. What's a little known part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 was the inclusion of a bill that had been promoted for many years by those in the craft beverage industry, the Brewers Association, the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States, which was the Craft Beer Modernization and Reform Act. And what it did primarily was it significantly reduced excise taxes on beer, wine, and spirits. So excise taxes are taxes basically on productivity. They're taxes that manufacturers of products pay to the government based on some measure of volume or quantity that they're producing. So in this case, with beer, it's by barrels, by alcohol, by spirits, it's proof gallons. And these were some pretty significant cuts that happened 2 years ago that were scheduled to sunset on December 31st of this year if Congress did nothing. And we were, those of us that I represent a lot of clients in this area, we were all very concerned because you had to get this bill, this extender had to go through the Ways and Means Committee, and their hearing room was taken up by the impeachment hearings. So the public hearings. So they fortunately, the good part is they extended them the bad part is they only extended them for a year, and they did not yet make them permanent. So we're now playing political football with some significant numbers. We're talking about prior to the reform bill, it was $13.50 excise tax per proof gallon. So a proof gallon is a liquid gallon of spirits that's 50% alcohol at 60 degrees Fahrenheit. So it amounts to, for like the bottle that you'd usually buy at a liquor store that's, you know, 80 proof, it'd be about $2 a bottle would be excise tax. When the bill brought it down to $2.70 per proof gallon, this in 2017. So huge cut in the excise tax. And they had not reduced the excise tax since, I believe, 1991. This tax had been in place this way, and you're talking about a lot of small manufacturers that have come up in the last decade. This tax is very significant, and I had talked to clients. They were very concerned about what they were going to do if Congress hadn't acted. You know, talking about, you know, laying people off, raising prices, doing all these things, or even some of the smallest ones, probably us even going out of business. So this is still a problem that they only pushed it for a year. You know, they did this, remember with the Bush era tax cuts, that they did this over and over and over again, extending it 1 year at a time. I don't think that this is the type of tax that they should be playing political football with. You're talking about curtailing economic activity by playing this game with it. Just make it permanent and move on to something and fight about something else.
Is this one of those things where like the large producers are okay with the higher?
Yes. Yeah, because they don't, the cuts primarily benefit the small manufacturers.
Yeah.
Whether it be a brewery or a distillery. Because it's a lower rate for like the first 100,000 proof gallons. So your smaller local, or so a lot of our local distilleries, the micro distilleries, would be affected by it more so than, say, Jim Beam or Jack Daniels or some of the big producers.
So this is my issue with the entire way that we do tax code politics in Washington, though, is that you got this whole group, and this is one of those tax extenders that you hear about, and one of a group of things that was changed under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act to get rid of some of these loopholes, the carve-outs, the exemptions, the whatever you have it, where one group of people is getting one kind of tax break, another group getting another tax break. You got this distillery, this versus a big distillery. You've got the racehorse here versus this. You've got green energy versus. Why can't we come up with a system of taxation that doesn't depend on going to Congress to say we want special treatment here versus special treatment here? Because too often, this is something that Congress is putting in place that literally benefits one group versus another. Now, I don't want to complain about lower taxes, and especially not lower taxes on the booze that we're drinking. That's the right direction to go in. My problem is the bigger debate where every 2 years, every 18 months, every year, they kick this can down the road and we have to relitigate, rehab the fight, where if you've got the lawyers, you've got the lobbyists, you've got the people that can play this game, then you can get the tax break that you want to have.
That's a good point. And just to be clear, the big producers still get the tax break for the first, that as long as for the amount of product that they put out under that threshold, and then anything they put out above it is, it's like a second rate. But you identified a key thing. You know, excise taxes were put in place in some ways as it was like a public safety issue, right? We're going to try to, we want to curtail how much of this product you're putting out into
social
the market.
Engineering in the government.
There was actually excise taxes used to fund the federal government before we had an income tax. And then they got the double whammy of prohibition plus, hey, you're going to get an income tax now too. We found a new way to fund the federal government and we're not let you drink anymore. The problem is the excise taxes across the board are too high, but it's more politically expedient to fund. They're just using it as a revenue generator now. Yep. They rather than go and do the unpopular thing of raising somebody's income tax and then get voted out and have it go back down. The federal government has reached a level that requires such funding that they have to go sneak around with things like excise taxes and keep them at unusually high levels in order to fund this behemoth that they've created.
Yep. And why they're in the business of regulating and saying and just telling people what they can or can't drink or what level of proof the ridiculousness of liquor laws across the country is Brian will do an entire history class on that someday.
I'll do it right now if you'd like. in Minnesota, you know, this is a federal issue, but you know, in Minnesota, we still have a little bit of a Puritan, outlook on.
We got about as much prohibition left as anybody does.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we have a hard time, you know, having any kind of liquor bill. So like right now, we're the only state in the union that still has 3-2 beer.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know that that's going to get addressed other than that people are going to stop making it. But, you know, because having a liquor bill of any kind gets so controversial because Minnesota still tries to have such tough, strict controls over those things. I mean, even it's not just Republicans and Democrats too, you know, with, Governor Dayton and medicinal marijuana, not even getting into the recreational stuff. You know, we have still one of the most restrictive, medicinal marijuana programs in the country, and we can't sell cars on Sunday. Yeah, we got all kinds of weird stuff going on.
Well, you're going to have a fight in this upcoming session in Minnesota about the level of production of some of these smaller breweries that started out as a very small craft brewery, made an amazing product, had great success, and that are now running up against limits that maybe once upon a time looked like they were never going to be reached, but now they're up against, they're not going to be able to produce at that level anymore.
Right. And the same thing with distilleries. You know, we created a definition of a micro distillery with a, you know, a certain production level. And we have a few, I happen to have a few clients that are getting close to that limit. Right. And their only option, if they want to continue to expand, because, you know, they aren't just going to say, okay, we've got as big as the state will allow us, we're going to stop now. That's not realistic. They'll end up putting in a second facility in another state. So we're going to start losing jobs and tax revenue because of these ridiculous laws that at this point they aren't even, you know, maybe some of these things started out as blue laws, you know, concern for the, you know, the consumer or public safety. And now it's just special interests that are keeping them in place. Other groups don't want to see the manufacturers
right
grow and make more money.
You got other groups that have found a way to make a product or make a profit on the current status quo.
Exactly.
Not because they're making the good product or facilitating that and doing a good job of it, but they're simply trying to protect the carve out they've already gotten, protect their way of doing things, and really kill any kind of innovation in that market.
That's right. And with Minnesota, just like a lot of laws we have here, and why you see businesses relocate to other states, the states around us, the Dakotas, Wisconsin, Iowa, are in many ways less restrictive. So you've got the perfect storm of too much regulation and easy opportunities to expand nearby elsewhere in other states.
Let's take a call. We have Steve from St. Paul who wants to talk about government involvement. Thanks for calling in and thanks for listening, Steve.
City of St. Paul found out that he was on the line, and they shut that down right away.
Shut it down.
You can't talk about too much government if you're from St. Paul. We don't have nearly enough over there.
Well, we still appreciate you listening to the call. It seems like something happened. But what Steve, I think, was going to talk about was government involvement. I'm not sure if it was, you know, in the liquor industry in general. But, I mean, it seems like, you know, and we were talking about kind of, you know, a little bit of the Puritan nature of some of Minnesota's views on this. But a lot of times it comes down to jobs.
Right.
And, you know, and it seems like, you know, no matter what we think about, you know, the consuming of alcohol, it's a legal product.
That's right.
It's a legal product, and it's something where, you know, Minnesota takes a lot of pride in their microbreweries, and then, you know, now we're even getting into, you know, craft spirits and whatnot. But these are jobs. I mean, these are entrepreneurs. These are, you know, a lot of times young people that have an entrepreneurial spirit that we are stunting.
Right.
And, you know, ultimately we do that at our own peril, not only on topics like this, but, you know, with many other, you know, issues as well.
Well, we've done it on so many pieces. I mean, you just finally got rid of this medical device tax federally. Yeah. That is one of those things. If you're concerned about jobs and wealth creation and quality of life in Minnesota or in the nation, you want to foster that industry. You want to continue. You want them to find new and better ways of doing things all the time. Why we would do something so dumb as to tax that kind of an industry to death, it's beyond me.
Well, and I had the last glass of Jameson that it's ever going to be poured at the Happy Gnome, and, you know, Agueras in St. Paul, they're not coming back. We're losing, you know, well-known restaurants left and right, and there's, you know, lots of different reasons for it, but you can't say that the minimum wage and a lot of the other tax structures aren't driving these businesses out of existence.
That's a good point, Brian. You know, the manufacturers aren't the only ones taking it in the shorts when it comes to the hospitality industry. And you do see, yes, there's a lot of factors. It's hard to make a profit and stay around in the restaurant and bar business, but it doesn't help. There's a high concentration. You look at the list of those that are closed this year. You mentioned a couple, O'Gara's and the Happy Gnome, at Lee's Liquor Lounge, yeah. Four Paws, Russian Tea House. I mean, so many of these long-time establishments in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And what's different between there and every place else? Well, they're the ones that are, you know, increase, you know, supposedly for the benefit of the employees, you know, putting in, you know, PTO laws and, you know, increased PTO laws and increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And, oh my goodness, look what's happening. The same thing that's happened every other city that's done that.
Yeah.
And everybody stands around, you know, feels bad, you know, is upset that they're gone. But it's like, unfortunately, you're pricing these jobs out of the market.
if this is St. Paul, I mean, we should really just pass laws that said thou shalt stay in business. You have to stay open and run at this loss.
That seems fair.
It seems like St. Paul.
Unless they don't want you to run, because that's another thing. I've had some clients that actually, we've just given up the license because of continued penalties. They what they can't do through eminent domain anymore around that soccer stadium, they do by coming up with license condition violations so they can strip the liquor license down and basically make you sell your to something that they'd rather have there.
Well, I'm super excited. We're going to take a break now, but in the next segment, we're going to hear from J.J. Capp, who is the son of Viking legend Joe Capp, who's going to tell us about a new book that he has written that we're super excited about. You are listening to the Justice and Drew Show on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, FM 103.5. You can also catch us on TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on the iHeartRadio app.